Welcome to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free call-in number for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody, followed by the number 8. Or, if you're currently, recently, or about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. Is homelessness the same everywhere in the world? Do some governments do a better job than others at helping their poor? How does America stack up against other countries in this regard? And can we learn lessons from the good or bad examples that have been set abroad? We'll ask these questions and many more in an international hour right after this.
Leroy McIntosh, I work for the Norwalk Health Department. At one time, I was homeless, and because of that experience, I believe I can speak about being homeless. I was once one of the statistics. I once lived in abandoned houses. I too once used drugs to escape from my dilemma. I too was once an addict. But thank God for His love and mercy, because I strongly believe that it was God and God alone that put some people in my life. I learned how to see the good that was in me and not to dwell on the bad. Because if you dwell on the bad, you're going to do something negative. We need some type of social programs. We need programs when a person goes to jail that you can rehabilitate that person. Society speak about rehabilitation, but here's a person that come off the street. He have no job. How are you rehabilitating that person when he comes out of the jails? He still don't have a job. He don't have a skill, and he's homeless. It's a twofold thing. The mental issues, and most of them get through, they're dealing with their mental stress, mental issues by using drugs. Then that create another problem, because the addiction is only a symptom of the underlying problem. Like I said, I was an addict. I was homeless. And I don't know if you ever heard or read about Pandora's box. I was like Pandora's. Every day I wake up, I had a lot of hate, despair, hopelessness. And sometimes I didn't want to wake up, because every day these things came coming back at me. And then one day I reach back in that box and I find hope. And that hope come by my faith in Christ. The mental issues is something that need to focus on, because most of the people that's in the shelters have mental issues. You remember the state shut down the mental institutions. And most of the people end up going to jail, and then they come out in the shelters. The shelters aren't equipped to deal with people with mental problems, so they're on the street. I was on the street for 4 years. For four long years. And the funniest thing about that, I was getting a check every month, but I was still on the street. No one wakes up and says, I want to be an addict. We all have dreams. Most people want to be judges, lawyers, doctors, some professional person. Nobody wants to be an addict. Nobody wants to be homeless. But these things happen. Right now, I would say my impact, I wish it was greater. But it's very small. You know, you must remember there are always going to be the have and the have not. My dad once told me, he said, son, the big fish always eat the little fish. You know, God gave Moses the 12 commandments, and Jesus gave two. But the greatest of all the commandments was love thy neighbor as thyself. I think if we show more love or more compassion. And love don't necessarily mean you have to bring a person in your house. Love means reaching out. And as a community, as a nation, we need to reach out. We need to. And you will find that if an individual reach out that we can help end this homelessness. It's going to take a while because it didn't happen overnight. We just neglected it, and now it's going rampant. We need to show more love. We need to lift people up instead of abandoning them. Show them love instead of hate. Give them hope instead of hopelessness. We must not be judgmental, but always remember that the morning and the evening is part of the same day.
This feature was produced by Dave Schwartz from WPKN Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Nobody, and welcome back to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, where the numbers to call in are 877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody and the number 8. Or you have an additional number if you're homeless, formerly homeless, afraid you're about to be homeless. You can also call in at 866-LEFT-OUT. And if anybody wants to see what's going on here at the broadcast site outside of Columbus House, a shelter in New Haven, Connecticut, or if you want to see why it is I'm in radio instead of television, you can tune into the webcam by going to our website at www.homelessnessmarathon.org. This hour, we're going to talk about homelessness around the world, really, not just in Canada and the United States. And my co-hosts for this hour are Inger Koch Nielsen, I'm probably mispronouncing that, who is talking to us from Denmark. She is the Danish representative to FIANSA, which is the European Federation of Organizations Working with the Homeless. Inger Koch Nielsen, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you very much.
We're very glad to have you. And also on the line, just returned from the World Social Forum in Brazil, is Sherry Hankala, who is the executive director of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union in Philadelphia. Sherry, welcome back to the Homelessness Marathon.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning, and I'm very glad to be speaking to you again. Let me start with you, Inger. You have a pretty broad view of what's going on in Europe, and please remember, Americans don't know much about Europe, don't speak many of the languages, as you know. How broad, how big a range of different ways of dealing with homelessness will we find in the countries of Europe?
Oh, you will find a lot of different ways of arranging politics for homeless. I mean, they differ rather much from the northern part of Europe to the southern part, and the problems are different also in the western and eastern part of Europe, of course.
Okay. And can you tell us an example of, for instance, one country where there are tremendous numbers of homeless people on the streets and a country where there's very little problem with homelessness?
I would say that in the Nordic countries, the problems are not that big with homeless in the street, perhaps also due to the climate. And in other countries, as in the former communist countries, you will see many people on the street, and they will be different perhaps because they are Romas, gypsies, you know. You will also see it in southern Europe, in Italy and Spain. Not Italy, that much, Portugal and Spain. They have had many homeless in the street, but they are trying to get rid of this now by constructing new housing.
Mm-hmm. So, are the countries that have fewer homeless on the streets, are they the countries that provide more support to people, more housing, or are they the countries that say, let's give them a kick in the pants and tell them to get on their own and do a better job of taking care of themselves?
No, definitely not the last thing. Definitely not. I think it's part of the whole welfare structure. It's part of housing politics and part of the support you give people who cannot earn their own money.
So if you, from where you sit, surveying Europe, you would say if we were going to learn from Europe what works and what doesn't work to end homelessness, providing support and help for people, that's actually what works.
Pardon, I didn't get that. I don't think you could learn that from Europe, actually, because the structure is so different. I think you might choose a German way. I mean, they do a lot in Germany. You might choose a Scandinavian way. And in UK, perhaps it's closer to you. They have also done a lot to get rid of homelessness. But it's the basic structure of society.
But the point is that the countries with less homelessness provide more services for poor people. Is that fair to say?
They try to avoid that people get poor.
Yes. Okay. Good way of putting it. Sherry, let me turn to you. You just came back from the World Social Forum. Was homelessness a topic there?
In a variety of different ways. I mean, they didn't call it homelessness, but they talked about the impact of globalization, and they talked about the free trade area agreement of the Americas, and they talked about the landless movement in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
But we made sure that there was a workshop talking about specifically about homelessness and trying to unite peasant movements and poor people and homeless people in all different parts of the world. And that was a very interesting and successful workshop.
Well, let me ask you a similar question to the one I asked Ingrid. Did you feel from what you heard there that there were some countries where either they were treating people who were poor better or where the homeless movements were more advanced, and some countries that you would say were really in worse shape?
Well, you know, as a formerly homeless mother from the United States, I constantly am moved to tears. No matter where I go in whatever part of the world, because it's a different kind of homelessness here in the U.S. It is, you know, I mean, homelessness anywhere is devastating. But there's so many, it's really a message of expendable people here in the U.S. When you're homeless. Other parts of the world, it's, you know, questions of development and other things that are happening in the economy and, you know, impacted by, you know, war and other kinds of things. And here there's really no need for homelessness, and the people that are homeless really get a message that they as individuals are absolute failures and they're not really needed in society anymore. And there's also a culture of resistance in different parts of the world, and it's very organized. And you know, no matter, you know, where it is, if it's in Brazil, you know, you could have just a roll and a little blanket and no place to sleep for the night. But you don't believe that there's something fundamentally wrong with you when you lay down at night, because chances are you're part of some larger resistance effort and a culture of organizing.
Hmm. Those numbers to call in again here on the Homelessness Marathon are 877-NOBODY-8, 877-NOBODY-8, or 866-LEFT-OUT. That's 866-LEFT-OUT. I want to ask you both the same question, and I'm going to start with you, Sherry. This is totally subjective, but if you were going to rank the countries that you know of in the world according to how they share the wealth, how they treat people, the dignity with which poor people live, and the conditions in which they can live, there's a lot of factors that go into this. Sherry, in your impression of things as a person who's been poor, been homeless, and organizes poor people, where would you say the United States ranks? Are we the best country for poor people? Are we the worst? Are we in the middle? Where would you say we are?
I'd say we're pretty near the worst. Also, after recently coming back from Venezuela, I would say that things are really beginning to change for large numbers of poor people there.
Mm-hmm. Inger, I'll ask you the same thing. Again, it's subjective. There's a lot of things. But as you look from Europe, is the United States the best country for poor people, the worst, somewhere in the middle? How would you assess it?
Oh, well, I don't think I'm really the right person to talk about that. But at least I do know that you are definitely not a country who is fond of redistribution of income. In that respect, you are very bad.
Yes, okay. Well, actually, I would disagree. I think we're very fond of redistribution, as long as it's taken from the poor and given
okay.
to the rich.
Okay, okay.
But we don't like to take it from the rich and give it to the
no.
poor. We just had these big tax breaks for the rich.
Yes.
Let me ask you another question, Inger. You talked about Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Was there more homelessness under communism, or is there more homelessness now in the post-communist Eastern Europe?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. All right. Well, hang on, both of you, because we got a caller on the line. Those numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866 left out. We have Wayne from Los Angeles. Wayne, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hey, how you doing today?
Well, we're doing great, as a matter of fact. What's on your mind, Wayne?
I had a little comment to add to the program, and that was I used to be a homeless for 10 years of my life. I did absolutely nothing just being a homeless guy. And one day I had a realization that I need to change my life, and I shook my body off and was able to shake my life in a whole new direction. And since I've come a far way from being a homeless person, and I'm greatly away from what I used to be before.
So you're here to say the change is possible.
It is very possible.
All right, that's a good comment, Wayne, and I thank you very much. Inger, let me go back to you and ask you something now about which I know you know a great deal. In Denmark, let me suppose for the moment that I am a Danish citizen and I lost my job and my money is running out and I'm in danger. I can't keep my housing because I'm going broke. What do I do? Is there any help for me from the government of Denmark?
If your only problem is that you lost your job, you would have an unemployment benefit for a rather long time.
What does that mean, a rather long time?
Oh, many years.
Years and years I can stay unemployed.
Yes, but you will be activated now. You'll not be allowed to walk around. The authorities will try to give you jobs. Not everybody likes that. If in the end your unemployment benefit runs out, you will be subject to cash assistance, which is not good, but you will not die from it.
But I won't, if I lose my job, no way am I going to lose my housing. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, if that is your only problem. It depends on if you have a very big house, of course. You will have to accommodate. But you will have, if you have a rented apartment, you will have support for the rent. You will have support for the children, and you will have your unemployment benefit. I don't say this is just marvelous or rich or anything, but you will not become homeless just because you become unemployed.
What about if you get really sick? A lot of people become bankrupt, lose their housing because of an illness. Can that happen in Denmark?
No. It cannot happen because of the illness, because the health care is free, hospitals are free, you don't have to pay for the general practitioner, so that cannot happen. But of course it could be a start of a social deroute. I mean, it could happen, but then it's not due to sickness itself. A lot of things have to come together before you are cast out into homelessness from external from the structures.
Let me ask you a couple of things more. What about if you are somebody who is an alcoholic, you get drunk all the time, you have a modest little apartment, but you can't work anymore because you're just drinking all the time, and the government knows it, you're just a drunk.
Mm.
Are you going to lose your housing that way?
Not that way, but that might be one way of losing it. The support, I wouldn't say the support, I would say the treatment for alcoholics have been bad for many years, and it's really actually part of the new government's policy to give more money to treatment for alcoholics. You wouldn't lose it because you were drinking, but if you were behaving awfully, if you were walking around in the streets, if you couldn't, I mean, if you were somehow, if some other things were wrong, that could be a start, yes?
And one, I could ask you these questions all night, Inger, but one more. What if I'm disabled? What if I'm in a, God forbid, I'm in a car crash, my spine is broken, or I go blind or something, and I'm incapacitated? Can I lose my housing in Denmark in that way?
Again, it depends. I would say what kind of housing you have, but you will have the same kind of support. You will have, first you will have, of course, a free hospital treatment. Then you will have sickness during the period of sickness, and then in the end you will have a pension. And if this is a kind of invalidity that you have, then it's not so difficult to have a pension because nobody expects you to work.
Okay, Sherry, I've missed it a few things. You deal with the homeless people every day. Have you ever seen an American who was homeless for any of the reasons I gave?
Absolutely, all of them. And I think a real sad one that wasn't mentioned is the correlation between, you know, not just losing your job, but also now losing your children.
Oh, right.
Because you don't have housing. We just buried a one-month-old baby 3 weeks ago. The family was in one of our takeover houses, and one of the five-year-old kids accidentally suffocated the newborn baby. And the police did an investigation and realized that it was an accident of a little kid playing with the baby. And Child Protective Services came and took the other four children. But the reason for taking the children had nothing to do with what happened to the infant. It's because she doesn't have a house to return to.
Right, and that is it. If you're a mother out on the streets, you can lose your children.
That's correct.
And it's happened many, many, many times.
We're seeing it now in especially places like Utah and, Pennsylvania, California, you know, all over the country. Actually, here in Philadelphia, there's a freeze on the reunification program. They say they don't have any resources for that program. So there's large numbers of women that can't be reunified with their children only because they don't have access to affordable housing.
All right. I just do want to make a little point here. I mean, it's really an important point, which is that in this country, we blame poor people for being poor. We blame homeless people for being without homes. But the exact same circumstances in Denmark, instead of blaming the people, they won't even be homeless. So how much blame can it be on the people versus how much blame on the government? Well, that's my two cents. In the tower, we have somebody who doesn't want to use his name at the microphone. But, sir, would you speak?
Yes. Now, I just want to say a few things. I'm one that had a good job, and I ended up losing it. Okay, I didn't wake up and say, okay, today I want to be homeless. But now I'm out here, okay? And it's definitely a humble experience for me. Because, you know, at one time I used to ride by and I used to see, you know, I used to see homeless people on the street. And not that I passed judgment on them, but I used to say, God, I hope that never happened to me. You know, and I used to, sometimes I just say to myself, I'm like, why don't they go do this? Why don't they go try to find a job? Or why are they homeless? Now that I'm out here, I realize that there's a serious housing issue out here. A lot of people have the resources, but they don't have a place to go. You know, they make it hard for some people. If you don't have credit, you can't get an apartment. I mean, there's a lot of factors involved here. Majority of the people here, I mean, nobody really wants to be here. I'm quite sure that, you know, if they was able to get some type of housing, there's a lot of people here that work, such as myself. But there's a housing shortage. And you know, people do look at you, well, you are stigmatized. You really are, and I definitely see that now, you know. And I'm glad that I had this experience to experience all this, because it definitely woke me up. There's not enough being done, you know. Thank God for the Columbus House and all the other shelters that's throughout this city, but there a lot needs to be done, you know. The people that's sitting in the right places is not doing the right thing as far as housing is concerned. It's like if you're homeless, it's like, oh, well.
All right. I want to thank you. I know you've got to go because you do have a job now, right?
Yes.
You're homeless, but you have a job. That's another thing that happens in America.
Yes.
How much do you, if you don't mind my asking, how much do you make at your job?
$15 an hour.
So that's a decent job.
Yes.
So are you on your way towards getting home
oh, yes.
housing again?
Yes.
Well, then
yes.
We want to wish you the very best, and you're living proof that being homeless is not the end of the world, and you can get out of it, and I congratulate you on that, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, those numbers again to call in here are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT, and on the line we have Gus from Burbank, California. Gus, welcome to the marathon.
Thank you very much. I had an opportunity to be homeless for about 7 months one time, and I'm a technical professional, and you'd think, we shouldn't have any problems sticking one job after the other, but I had gotten into a contracting kind of a mode where I'd work 6 or 8 months and then be between jobs and then 6 or 8 months, and the pay was good. But anyway, one time I came to the end of a job, and I didn't come up with a new one. And I ran out of money, and I found myself in the middle of Silicon Valley with nowhere to live, no money to buy anywhere to live. And I wasn't hooked into the shelter opportunities that did exist. So I just figured, well, all right, I'll go find a quiet little place and put up my little tent. And for 7 months, I lived in the middle of Silicon Valley, but only because I was invisible. I was, and I can really understand, I can vouch for the fact that you pretty much have to be invisible in this country in order to be left alone.
Yeah, we had some people from New Haven in a tent who said the only reason they'd been able to stay there was nobody could find them.
Exactly. Nobody could find me. Same thing. I was, you know, there were bushes 10, 12 feet high, you know, high enough. I mean, if the police were looking with helicopters, I would have been found, I suppose. But anyway, the point I want to make is that, I'm sure in ancient times when we were hunter-gatherers, nobody thought anything of it. If you were out camping, that's what everybody did. But some 10,000 years ago, we transitioned into an agricultural society. And ever since then, as time has gone on, more and more people have acquired land. I mean, the whole concept of land ownership is something that Native Americans used to shake their heads and wonder, what in the heck are you talking about? How can you own land? But anyway, it's come to the point now where I've found out that it's actually very difficult to become invisible because everybody owns everything, and there are fences everywhere. It's pretty
strange. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Inger, I know you've already answered this, but I think it's a point that just can't be made enough, so I want to ask you this again. Here's Gus. He's saying he's a highly paid professional, but he would only work 6 months a year, and then he wouldn't have a job. And then one time he just didn't get another job. Would Gus be homeless if he was a Danish citizen?
No. Not if that was the only thing that happened to him. Not at all.
That's it. There would be no issue here of homelessness.
Well, that's great. Well, I'd be happy to work anytime I can. I mean, it's funny because as we speak, I am fortunate enough to be under the caring, loving wing of my mother again, but if it weren't for her, I'd still be out in the street. And I've applied for over 800 jobs in the last year and a half.
I've
had just one tiny nibble, and that turned out to nothing. What can you do?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
well,
let me
thank you very much, Gus,
for
your contribution here to the marathon. Sherry, I want to ask you something. And by the way, we had a guy named Kevin from the San Francisco Chronicle. I gave it to him pretty good earlier for anybody who was listening. But I would like, because I didn't like what he had written about homelessness, but I do want to tell the people out there that, Sherry, you are one of the people I just respect the most. And anybody who doesn't know what the Kensington Welfare Rights Union is ought to find out and look it up on the web. Sherry, I have heard conflicting things about Philadelphia. Some people say it's now one of the best cities for homeless people. What is your assessment of it?
Well, I think that they have to say that politically. When you have a large, well-organized group of poor and homeless families organizing, you have to begin to allocate more resources to the shelter system and to highlight it as a model for ending homelessness, because we're doing a great job here exposing the reality. We're really angering a lot of folks right now because we had a cold blue here a couple weeks back, and we were exposing the fact that supposedly when it's 10 below, you're supposed to be allowed to go into hospitals and police stations and fire department when it's below zero and you can freeze to death. And what we were doing is we were exposing the fact that this is absolutely not true. And the thing that was stunning to us was hospitals, that we were actually having homeless people go into those hospitals and to even ask for the crisis centers, and then having them get on the phone and call me to verify that they were actually being thrown out.
My goodness, even in 10 below weather.
Even in 10 below weather.
Now, you came back from the World Social Forum. I guess there's nobody in the world who's equal to the Brazilians as far as organizing right now. At least that's my impression. I may be wrong. But where do you think, I asked you where we rank on preventing homelessness in this country, where do you think the homeless movement in the United States ranks? I'm not trying to give you like an exact ranking, but what is your sense? How well organized are we to fight back against this stuff in this country as opposed to the movements of poor people in other countries?
We have a very long way to go. We're in some beginning stages. I just came back from a 3 days with homeless organizations around the country and told all of them to tune into the marathon to promote it every year. And we're holding a leadership school this summer in July for leaders of poor and homeless people and poor and homeless people themselves in July, and so we want to encourage folks to go to that school. But again, it's going to these international exchanges and meetings that constantly brings tears to my eyes because, a couple things. First, people from places like Denmark can't believe that we've allowed people to adjust to such a lower standard of living. And then people from like Brazil and the MST can't believe that, people die in this country outside mansions and outside abandoned houses because they just get organized and take those things back because, they believe that they're human beings and there's something, much more sacred, and that's staying alive. And with the additional, emphasis on homeland security and the criminalization in communities, we've got a lot of obstacles to deal with because, we're the ones that, send the military and we house the School of the Americas and teach the dictators in different parts of the world.
Right.
So we've got a ways to go, but there definitely is a movement in this country, and thank God for things like the Homeless Marathon because the media certainly won't tell you that a homeless movement is growing.
Well, thank God for things like the KWRU. And by the way, when we did our first national broadcast, which was the second in the series on the marathons, we did it from outside the KWRU's headquarters. So we are very much on the same wavelength and very much appreciate the work that you do. Inger, let me ask you this. Are there, in the countries where there's more homelessness in Europe, are there movements of poor people that are organizing in Europe? I know about this more in Latin America than I do in Europe. What's going on in this regard in Europe?
There are movements. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We even have a small movement in Denmark.
Really?
Yes, but typically enough, it gets grant from government.
You're so kidding. The poor people's movement in Denmark gets a grant from the government?
Yes. Yes, they do. They also edit their own, what do we call it, the big issue like street journal.
Yeah.
And it's supported from the Ministry of Social Affairs. Yes.
I don't know what to say. I think I'm struck dumb by this. Sure. That you're financing in Denmark your own poor people's movement. I just can't even believe it. It makes you feel like you've walked through the looking glass. All right, listen, we got some callers on the line. Let me take some calls. Those numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866 left out. Mark from Denver, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, Mark, what's on your mind?
First of all, I want to really thank you for having this show.
You're welcome.
It's extremely insightful, and the argument that you're making that other countries with social safety nets, such as Denmark, Finland, Sweden, mm-hmm. Even, you know, Britain, even Australia, really every country other than the United States, I mean, as far as, you know, developed nations are concerned, mm-hmm. It is an argument that I have tried to present and have made to many, many people in my previous line of work, which was charitable work.
Uh-huh.
And there's a notable difference between those countries and us, but it's astounding how ignorant the American public is, particularly those who, have spent a lot of time at universities, for example, even professors, doctors, lawyers, I mean, just people who've had a lot of time to study different things, travel, to other countries, they're more politically involved. Their lack of knowledge and their lack of comparative knowledge is unbelievably low. And I think that there's a deliberate effort in our country, in the United States, to keep people ignorant, beginning with elementary school.
I don't know if I want to go back that far, but you don't have to go back very far. Look at this debate we had about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, which did not exist. And
right.
When the Germans and French expressed skepticism, there was a 24/7 campaign to ridicule and discredit them. We shouldn't take those other countries seriously.
Well, look at that's such a great example, because look at what we're doing in Iraq right now.
Mm-hmm.
Our whole campaign there, which, I would argue, is strictly an economic campaign. We're there for one reason and one reason only, and that's economic gain. We are essentially setting up what gives the appearance of democracy, just like the United States appears.
Just like Florida. Listen, Mark, I got to move on, but do you have a question for either of my co-hosts before I let you go?
Gosh, I had so many things to say. I know I can't monopolize the
call. Well, I wish we had.
Call, but
we only have 14 hours, and it never seems like enough, you know?
well, one thing that I noticed being an executive director for charities, and one thing I learned, through my experiences, working directly as an employee and also as a volunteer, for charities that deal directly with the homeless, homeless, families as well as homeless individuals. My opinion is, and I would like to get feedback, especially from the person from Philadelphia, or the United States spokesperson. My feeling is that one of the biggest causes, and I mean direct causes, of homelessness, and also the perpetual nature of homelessness in our country, is due directly to charities. And charities in the name of particularly the larger charities, the Salvation Army, the Red Cross, and particularly the international charities, they are so much wealthier, and have so much more in terms of resources financially and politically. They have so much more clout and so much more money than any for-profit organization that it's unbelievable. And they benefit immensely every single time there's a natural disaster, every single time people get hurt, and all and the interest that they gain.
We've got your drift. So, Mark, I'm going to thank you, and I'm going to let Sherry address this point. Sherry,
yeah, and I would just like to hear what she.
Well,
what
let's
she
hear it. Sherry, charities and homelessness. What would you say is the relationship?
We definitely have a huge problem. I mean, I think that there's a lot of good individuals that mean well in, you know, programs like the Salvation Army and the Red Cross and different shelters and that kind of stuff. First of all, homeless people that are in shelters by and large across the entire U.S. are not allowed to participate in any kind of advocacy efforts. That's, you know, a number one huge problem. And then secondly, an example is if somebody has a house fire here in Philadelphia, the Red Cross puts them up at this, you know, terrible hotel for 3 days, and then after that they're on their own. They're on the streets, and they have nothing to do with them in terms of helping them to get their lives back together. And then we see, you know, millions of dollars going in to help other important efforts in other parts of the world, like the recent crisis in Asia. But I definitely know that homeless people here stand and watch what happens with all those resources that come into those various different charity organizations. They don't end up back here to really help the families deal with the stuff that they're in, the crises that they're currently involved in. And also, I mean, the whole charity process is really about social control. Because if people can stay busy standing in line all day to find out if they can get a mattress on the floor someplace, then it keeps them busy from linking up with, demonstrating or setting up encampments or holding sit-ins in City Hall and stuff like that, because, you know, they need to, you know, stand in line so that at the end of the day their number is called so that they can have a mattress on a floor someplace.
This, by the way, is why we don't take contributions on the Homelessness Marathon, because we don't want to confuse people. I'm not against charity, but we don't want to confuse people into thinking that charity is going to solve this problem. And I'll tell, if Mark is still listening or anyone else, a cautionary tale. I may have some of the details wrong, but I believe if it's worth investigating. The worst story I know of this regard happened in San Diego, where under the McKinney Act, decommissioned federal properties are supposed to be made available to homeless people. But in San Diego, they decommissioned the naval base, and that opened up some of the best seaside properties in California. And the city fathers, shall we say, didn't want to see these incredibly expensive, potentially lucrative pieces of real estate going to the poor. So to get around the McKinney Act, they convened the major charities that were dealing with homelessness and appointed them the spokespeople for the homeless, and then cut a deal in which they donated more money to the charities in exchange for the charities saying that they would waive their rights under the McKinney Act for those seaside properties in the decommissioned naval base. So really the charities acted in San Diego, from what I understand, in a way to disenfranchise homeless people and actually keep them out of what would have been very good housing for them. And that is the most disgraceful single story I know. There may be more to that story than I know, but that is a cautionary tale. Those numbers to call in here again are 877-NOBODY8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. We have Rhodes Scholar on the line from Santa Cruz, Rhodes Scholar. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Oh, thank you very much. Outstanding.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience.
Been hearing a lot of good wisdom.
Great. What's
many
on your mind?
Experienced people. Ultimately, I'd like to point out the fact that we all share the same planet. It's the label we use is homelessness. It's strange because we all actually have a home, but it's the allocation of a place to live, especially in America, being able to sort of buy or rent your lifestyle via the commercial market system.
Uh-huh.
That seems to deprive us of a place of being. That's one thing I've noticed. The other is the control on the media that portrays images. We have such a fantastic, shall I say, corporate-controlled propaganda machine that's better than anything Nazi Germany ever had in terms of being able to convince the public of about anything. So this particular effort that I'm hearing, say, for several hours now, is an outstanding example of how committed people can sort of change or try to get the facts out for people, because basically people aren't stupid. They have common sense. But they're kept so busy on the treadmill and being fed a lot of phony images from, shall I say, popular entertainment media at large, that they can't really see things straight unless they, you know, they're taught or at least given a better factual base to go by.
Hang on one second. I want to ask Inger something, because Rhodes Scholar here talks about our common home on the planet and so forth, which it touches on an interesting issue, Inger. In Denmark, is there a feeling of community? I mean, what is it that motivates the social welfare system there? Is there a feeling that all Danes are in this country together? I mean, what makes Denmark different from the United States in this regard?
I think that we have always been a very homogeneous country. We are a small country. We have a background as one nation state, so we have been very solidaristic for many years. Perhaps it's changing now. Neoliberalism is also finding its way to the Scandinavian countries. But there is a sense of we are here together, and especially Danes who belong to the territory, we have to look after each other, yes.
Mm. Rhodes, what do you have to say to that?
Well, I like to see a united humanity, one that is based on, you know, a generous spirit and an egalitarian base, not one that's based on the sort of a social Darwinian model that says that I got mine, you go get yours. I've traveled extensively, and I have lived as, shall I say, a traveling troubadour, minstrel, backpacker for extended periods of times, and I've experienced all manner of social services in the process, in rural and urban settings. I've seen what the so-called, shall I say, homelessness is up front, although I never experienced, per se, the personal degradation of it, other than to say I've been in rescue missions. I volunteered there, or I used the services, or I was in transitional family shelter. It just depends on where I was and what I was doing at the time. What I decided to do was test it out to the full to see how it worked. So I know it pretty well, at least insofar as the United States
did
goes.
You think it worked?
Can't say I've been outside of it, and I would have to say there's good and bad aspects about it, but clearly I like the idea when somebody said the solution is, hey, we need housing.
There you go.
And affordable housing.
All right. On that note, I'm going to thank you very much for the call.
Well, aloha.
Aloha. Inger, let me ask you one other question. If Sherry and I got together and organized and chartered a plane full of homeless people from America and sent them to Denmark, would Denmark take them in?
As tourists, yes. But they wouldn't be allowed to stay here.
You wouldn't help them with housing over there.
No, we wouldn't.
Sherry, I have to say, it sounds like an idea I'd kind of like to try. See if we can get a plane load of people and see if we can find somebody to take our homeless if we won't take them.
Yeah, it would be a great educational. But I can tell you one thing that we intend to do is the World Social Forum in 2007 is taking place in Africa. And we intend to bring the largest delegation, at least 100 people that are currently homeless or poor, to, you know, expose the world to the fact that one of the biggest hidden secrets in our country is that we care for the least of us in our country. We intend to set up a tent at the World Social Forum in 2007 to ask for solidarity and help of growing poor and homeless movement in the U.S.
Okay. Phone numbers to call in, 877-NOBODY-8. Or if you're homeless, formerly homeless, or afraid you're about to be homeless, 866-LEFT-OUT. On the phone, we have Gopal from Los Angeles. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you very much. God bless us all. This stuff breaks my heart.
Yeah.
I was homeless. My college funding had it didn't come through on time for my next semester, and I was in my final stages of preparing to be a court stenographer, and I ended up homeless. And then I had a fall, and my right arm became paralyzed, and I was homeless, terribly sick, had no health benefits or anything, and of course, by the time my school money had finally come through, it had come through late, but I was so incapacitated and everything, nobody could find me or anything to let me know. And when I found out, they sent all my funding back and everything. But then again, my right arm was paralyzed anyway. Enough with that. But I think that there's some important points that I learned. And plus, being homeless and sick, to have diarrhea and vomiting, I mean, you can't imagine how hellish that is. I mean, maybe the homeless can. But it's funny because the prisons is homeless shelters, the way they've come to be. Prison is also the only place where slavery is legal. So what's really going on here?
Well, you make a good point because of that cheap prison labor. And hang on one second, Inger. In Denmark, do you have a lot of people in prison like we do here?
Not as you do here, but we have a lot, yes.
And does there, this is a tricky question, okay, but is there a correlation in Europe? Do the countries that have more homeless people also have more prisoners? Is that a relationship? Do the countries with less homelessness have fewer prisoners, or is that not something that follows?
I don't think it has anything to do with each other.
Okay. Well, I think it does here.
Of course, there is a lot of crime going on. I mean, people who are homeless are also now and then prisoners,
yep.
And they have a very high crime rate because they have started that. That's how that is. But I don't think there is a political correlation, no.
Okay, well, I think there is here, but that's fine.
A lot of people are considered criminal, too, or immoral.
Just for being poor.
Both, just for being vagrants, which is another wonderful feather in the hat. But I think another aspect, too, is that when people are starving in the streets and dying and it breaks my heart, I mean, I have a Section 8 place. And it's funny because I'm drowning in medical expenses. I can barely eat. I practically live on oat water. And I had to go to City Hall and explain to them that, you know, how it was that I was able to stay alive on what little money I had. And expenses just keep going up, up, up. And I said, well, you know, it's really tough. I have to buy everything in bulk, and I don't know what I'm going to do if things keep going up the way they are going up. And then after they figured it all out, they raised my rent. But another thing about people being homeless, when people are homeless, the people going to work, they see them, you know, and when they see people dying in the streets, then they're willing to tolerate the worst jobs and the worst living conditions because they're, you know, they're not dying in the streets. So that, you know, it makes them feel a little bit better. I mean, the whole thing is just lowered. It's almost like now if you can shower and have indoor lavatory facilities, you're middle class.
You know, I think you make an excellent point, and on that note, I'm going to thank you for your call.
All right.
Sherry,
God bless us all, and
thank
you.
Thank you, and God bless you. And Sherry, maybe you'd like to comment on that. You know, this is not the first time I've heard this thought, that homelessness is actually a tool that keeps the rest of us in line, and there's a certain advantage to employers and others that there should be homeless people out there to scare the workforce so they don't unionize, don't complain. What do you think?
Well, it, definitely. I mean, especially folks that have mental health issues, those are usually the folks that are, you know, visible on the streets. And, you know, they make sure that nobody talks about what homelessness is really about overall. It's about, you know, not having access to living wage jobs and not having affordable housing in this country. And, you know, and it really is an example that's held up in workers' faces in this country, that they should just, you know, accept their, you know, low-wage jobs, because after all, they don't want to end up, you know, living under a bridge. And I think one of the differences as well, I mean, at least the time that I went to Denmark, is we even create, our architecture is created around ensuring that we keep the homeless invisible in this country. The new thing with, you know, more and more fences under bridges, fences in front of churches. This is definitely something I didn't see in Denmark.
Inger, let me ask you something. If Sherry was to write a letter to your government, do you think there's any chance the Danish government would finance the American homeless movement?
I don't know. You could try.
Well, it's a thought, Sherry, anyway.
No, it definitely yeah. is. And actually, you know, other, you know, parts of the world are really they're beginning to understand that everybody is impacted by our model, and that there's actually a self-interest in supporting the, you know, poor and homeless people getting organized in this country.
I think I might just have time for about 10 seconds for another caller. Two Ravens from Taos, New Mexico. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
10 seconds I got, huh?
Maybe 20, but to talk quick.
Okay, well, we're on, Nash. God, it's beautiful what you're saying. And what the people have said tonight is what a blessing, you know, to at least address the issues with Mr. Bush cutting the cost of everything. Wow, so he can spend it on a war for the corporations. So we do got to get corporate control here at some point. And let's see, define the corporations by the eight dynamics. What's man's survival? Because the federal government has been killing our leaders, you know? Mr. King is an example. Much love to you.
Are you there? Yes, I'm here, and I want to thank you. I saw on the little thing I got on my screen, you're a pothead from Haight-Ashbury in 67?
66, actually, is when I was there.
Okay.
And then later in 67, yeah.
Well, I'm always glad to talk to a fellow hippie, and let everybody out there know the hippies aren't gone. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm waiting for everybody else to catch on that we were right. So thank you very much.
People can get along in the park all on the same day
there
and
you
have
go.
The best of time, you know?
Thank you very much, Two Ravens. Inger Koch Nielsen from Denmark, I want to thank you very much for sharing your insights on the Homelessness Marathon. And Sherry Hunkla from Philadelphia, everybody should know it's www.kwru.org. And Sherry, I want to thank you very much. And if people want to get in touch with you, what's the next step?
Come join in the national movement to end homelessness.
And you're organizing that?
That's correct.
All right. On that note, I want to thank you. I want to thank both of you very much for being my co-hosts here on the marathon, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be back for more. Thank you very much.
You are listening to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with WPKN Community Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations or of the originating or affiliated radio stations. To view the webcast of this broadcast, order tapes, or contact nobody after the show, go to www.homelessnessmarathon.org.